The next case for argument is 172589, Rayco versus Spin Master. I will almost certainly butcher your name, so why don't you tell us who you are?
Certainly, may it please the court. Tim Grochosinski, and on behalf of the appellant, Rayco LLC. May I proceed?
Yes, please.
Your Honor, there are two issues in this appeal. The first issue deals with Rayco's breach of contract claim, and the second issue deals with the patent infringement claim focused on Spin Master's auto-hovering toy products. So, focusing on the first issue that I stated.
Can I just ask you a sort of logistical question?
Yes.
I understand strategically you don't know what we're thinking or what we're going to do. So, particularly in gray, you spent much more time on the infringement questions and only ended with the signal claim construction, right?
Yes, sir.
Am I correct that if we were hypothetically to agree with you on the claim construction of A, we don't have to go any further on the infringement claims. We would just send it back for an adjudication of any arguments with regard to infringement.
I agree with that, yeah.
Okay, just thank you.
All right, so before you get into, I'm going to eat up some of your time. Before you get into your main arguments, for purposes of our audience, tell them what kind of very, very high-tech, and I do not mean that disparaging, invention is at issue in this case. Because they've heard, if you sat through the others, we were deep in the weeds on pharma stuff. So
hopefully this
tell
is
about this one.
More exciting subject matter for the audience.
You didn't bring any little samples that we
I did
play
not,
with.
Your Honor. So
I may request some.
My client is Rayco LLC. They're here in Chicago on Washington Street, and they invent toys. They've been doing it for 35 years in the city of Chicago. They design and develop toys, and their business model is when they design and develop toys in their workshop, they then license those to big toy companies, Spin Master being one of them, Mattel, Hasbro. You go to Target, you see toys they've invented. In this particular case, I started by breaking down into two separate issues, contract and patent. Both of them involve toys. The contract involves the flying toy helicopters that you can buy at Target, the remote controlled.
Oh, it's better than that. Like the one, it's like a little guy that looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy, and he's got a propeller hat on, and he lifts up by his head.
So then the patent, what we're speaking to here, the patent infringement side of it is what's called, I'm broadly calling the auto hover toys. The preferred embodiment in the patent is as you described. It looks like the old big boy.
So the two issues are completely separate in terms of the impact.
They are, Your Honor.
Okay.
In terms, they're separate legal issues, separate claims. And the auto hover products, kind of as the name suggests, they rely upon infrared signals to then detect where a surface is.
So do you mind, since I've made you do the technology, let's just go to the one signal versus multiple signal arguments?
Sure,
because we're already talking about how basically radio frequency signals are what cause the thing to raise or lower based on receipt of signals to do so, right?
Yes.
Because you want it to hover.
That's correct.
So, okay, so why don't you, if you don't mind jumping into that argument first, and then we'll back our way into the
setting, so there was two separate infringement arguments that were posited by my client. One of them deals with what I'll call the multiple signals theory. I mean, the other one deals with a single signal theory. And so, focusing on first the infringement
And
theory
in order to prevail, you need to prevail on both of those arguments, right?
I do not, Your Honor.
Why not?
And so, the argument one does relate to the claim construction issue. So to the extent this court, as we argue, thinks that the claim construction of a signal was wrong, then we have proved infringement under theory one, the multiple signals theory.
Well, that's what the district court, I thought, said you didn't do, that even under a multiple signal theory, there was no infringement because you didn't satisfy the control system limitations.
The district court did say that, Your Honor.
Well, so why don't you have to win on both issues?
No, they're two separate theories, is my point, Your Honor. My point is that
I don't understand what you mean. They're two separate theories as to why there is no infringement here. And in order to have a case on infringement, don't you have to overcome both theories?
No, Your Honor. Here's my point. I can prove infringement. Okay, let's assume for 1 second that the district court's construction was incorrect and it should be one or more signals. Okay?
Right.
Assuming that's true, our infringement theory using that construction is that if the thing is hovering low to the ground, all signals, so all one or more, are received, and based upon that, it will then increase its speed to gain altitude.
I'm not understanding this, because I thought the district court said even with multiple signals that this accused product doesn't satisfy the system limitation.
I disagree with that, Your Honor.
You
I don't think
they
that
didn't
was the
say
problem.
That?
I disagree with that.
Well, do you disagree with that? But the question is not whether you disagree. It's whether or not the district court...
My point is I disagree that the district court said that. I think the district court made two findings. I think that it incorrectly found that there's no infringement because it uses multiple signals, and that is tied to the claim construction.
I understand that, and clearly the district court did say that, and there's a question about that. But put that aside.
Yes.
Didn't the district court also say that even if multiple signals were in there, that it didn't satisfy the control system limitation?
I think that it did say that, and I think that that was
well, that's why you have
finding.
To win on that one, too. You have to win on both.
Where did the district court say that? Can you please point us to it?
Yes, Your Honor. And to be perfectly frank, I think that the district court's opinion is difficult to follow in this regard. But my understanding was that the district court summarily, without any citation to evidence, said in its opinion
where?
That... I apologize, Your Honor. Do you have the page for that? I don't have the page, Your Honor. I will get it for you. I apologize. But here's
I don't know. I think if I were you, I'd be a little cautious about sort of agreeing that the district court made findings against your client when you can't even find them in the opinion yet so that we can look at them, especially if you're going to tell me they're cursory conclusion, confusing and inconclusive or something.
Well, here's the reason why I say it, though, and I respond to the question quickly, Your Honor. It's because of this. The district court's construction was not just that it's limited to a single signal. The district court then went one step further and specifically said that any product that includes more than one signal, no matter what those signals are related to, cannot infringe this claim. It was an exclusionary claim construction.
Well, yes, I think the district court did say that, but it also said that under a multiple signal construction that the accused product don't satisfy the system, control system.
I apologize. I misunderstood your question, Mr. Dyke. I disagree, Judge Dyke. I disagree with that point. I don't think, though, that the district court said that. Here, if you look at it, it's at page 39. It's appendix 61, APPX 61. And there is a paragraph where it talks to, moreover, even if Reiko were correct, that signal in claim 1 could be construed to refer to one or more signals. The clear language of the claims, the abstract, and the specification show that, to the extent multiple signals could be employed in the specified control system, it would be the collective receipt or non-receipt of those signals. Okay? Going on then, he says that Reiko's expert, Dr. Spanko, admitted that the accused products do not explicitly show non-receipt of a signal. And then the court goes on and says, yet this is what Spin Master's products all do. First off, that is not what that testimony says whatsoever.
I don't even understand this paragraph.
Well, that was my point, Your Honor, about how it is ordered, to be frank. My point, though, is this. Under the multiple signals argument, it is undisputed. Their own documentation shows if it's all signals are received, it does one thing, which is gain.
I understand that argument. I just don't understand why we're having difficulty getting to the argument. Because my reading of the district court opinion is that he said, even under a multiple signal construction, you still lose because you don't satisfy the system control system limitation. He may have been wrong about that, or she may have been wrong about that, but there's the ruling, and you have to deal with it.
I agree with you, Your Honor. And my point is, that's why in response to Judge Moore's question, I believe that this is the rationale for what you're saying, Your Honor. And my point and my argument is that this rationale is severely flawed. Because the finding that under multiple signals that there is no infringement, that the control system limitation is not met, is faulty.
Well, and completely unsubstantiated. Like,
yes.
Why? The claim says what the claim says. If multiple signals are included in one signal, why would a multi-signal product not infringe the control? I don't understand.
So there's no
explanation whatsoever. It may be some sort of poorly worded fact-finding or conclusion. I don't know.
Well,
I don't
understand. And, Your Honor, I agree with you, and our argument with respect to the infringement side is that the evidence, there was an evidentiary record, and what the district court did is it selected specific...
There was substantial evidence that would support a jury verdict that the multiple signals caused the thing to go up and down in the way that the claims require, right?
Yes, and that's... I was trying to answer your question. I'm not trying to be evasive. What I was trying to do was explain to you why we believe the evidence supports the view that there is infringement and that the control system limitation is met.
Okay, well, let's go...
Can I just ask one little technical question? Do claims 1 through 3 rise and fall together?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Can you please now go to the one signal issue? And one of the problems I have with what the district court did is on page A60 of the appendix, which is page 38, the one signal... I mean, first off, we have a general rule. When something says A signal, our general rule as a matter of claim construction is that it includes one or more, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And it seems to me that the district court found on page A60 that Dr. Spinko basically testified that this product would not work or there would be some sort of technical impediment to the receipt of multiple signals causing a $3 or $5 toy to go up and down. Simple radio frequency signals, multiple signals. I mean, this is not rocket science. Like, I feel like my 14-year-old could, you know, figure out how to make one of these things work, take it apart, and put it back together again. So, and I don't mean that to be insulting to your client. I just mean that this is not all that hard. But the district court concluded that even Rayco's expert, Dr. Spinko, said, no, with one or more signals, this would be confusing. The implication the district court derived from that is that it wouldn't work with one or more signals. Do you think that's what Dr. Spinko was testifying to on page 1902 of the appendix?
I do not, Your Honor. And I would direct the court to page 25 of our opening brief, the blue brief.
See, the opening brief, you want to take us to the evidence.
I'm sorry. There's a giant...
Your blue brief...
I'm sorry, there's a giant block quote. It's APPX 1902.
Yep.
Okay.
That's fine.
And so I just so you're not aware, this is not an attorney argument. This is the actual testimony from Dr. Spinko. The focal point of the district court was on the first, I guess it would be five lines. And the problem is the district court didn't just stop reading, I guess. Okay? Because the first question makes absolutely no sense. The question is, and could you have, if you had multiple signals, could some of those signals cause the vehicle to go up and some of those vehicles cause the vehicle to go down?
Right.
That was
some
not
those,
a misstatement. Vehicles
some of those
cause
vehicles
the vehicle.
I get it. And the expert said, that's confusing.
And admittedly so. Dr. Spinko should have said that.
And then the very next question actually asked it the right way.
Correct.
And he then responded, I suppose so, depending on how you program it. It's just a matter of programming.
That's correct.
And this is really not that complicated. One signal versus two signals telling it whether to go up and down.
Your Honor, I agree with you. I think the issue is, and this is
the theme. District court seemed to rely pretty heavily on a belief that there would be some technical impediment, some technical confusion to achieving operation under multiple signals. Is that your understanding of what one place in which the district court erred in reaching its claim construction?
One of many.
Why don't we move on to the contract question?
On A1495, we have the settlement agreement. The question is whether the settlement agreement covers the Havok-Healy, okay?
Yes, sir.
And your argument is, the Havok-Healy was not part of the final decision by the royalty organization, and therefore it's not covered by the settlement. But the problem is that this all relates to things that relate to the audit. And since the Havok-Healy royalty dispute was originally part of the audit and originally was part of the draft audit report and was only removed after that, why is it that the Havok-Healy dispute does not relate to the audit?
Two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, is that the term audit was specifically defined as the report. And the report, before you jump in,
I'm just relate to. It doesn't say covered by. It says relate to.
It says related to the audit. The audit is defined as the report. The report never included the Havoc Healy, and Spin Master
took... Why isn't something that was originally in the report and then removed be something that was relating to the audit?
Because that Spin Master took the position that it didn't relate to it. Just like they took the position throughout this case that it's not covered by the helicopter agreement that was the subject matter of the audit. My point being is that when it suits them, it's included, but when it doesn't suit them, it's not included. You can't have it both ways.
I don't understand that they're saying that this language doesn't cover the Havoc Healy dispute. I think their position is that it does, and that it is something that relates to the audit, correct?
Not at the time of the audit, though, Your Honor. My point is that the Havoc Healy was excluded from the audit, okay, because of the position taken by Spin Master.
That they didn't owe royalties on.
That it wasn't even part of the agreement.
The original agreement.
That's correct. When the agreement was the agreement that was identified in the audit. And setting that aside, as a secondary point, Your Honor, there are two specific limitations on that release language. One of them is what we've been discussing, which is it's tied to the audit. That is my client's position. A separate issue, though, and a separate limitation is one of time. It specifically is the release language is specifically limited to Q1 of 06 to Q2 of 2010, which makes perfect sense. This is a royalty audit. You are resolving a royalty dispute about toys that have been sold. My point is that it was completely erroneous for the district court to find that we released claims related to toys that were never even sold. There's absolutely no justification for that finding whatsoever.
Toys that were never sold, what? When?
I'm saying after Q2 2010, the district court took the position that we just released everything. And there's absolutely no legal basis for that finding. Q2 2010 is the cutoff. So that sold in Q3 2010, Q4 2010, all the way up, I believe it's still being sold.
So you're saying to the extent that it was sold after 2010, it wasn't resolved?
It's not released, absolutely.
Okay, so, but in other words, that it might have been released for periods before that, but not after that.
I'm saying, even if you buy the position that you were arguing for, right?
I'm not arguing for positions, please.
I'm sorry. If you take the position that it was included within the scope of the audit, and so therefore, it still is temporally limited.
So part of the claim would be barred, but part wouldn't be.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're way over. We'll restore some rebuttal. Let's hear from the other side. No, not your fault. We asked you a lot of questions. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Megan Redman for Appley. Just to kind of respond to some questions you all raised during your examination, we do believe that they have to win on both theories. First, we think this whole case can be decided under the multiple signal theory because this district court did find that there's no predefined speeds. And that's something that's largely ignored. We hear a lot about these toys going up and these toys going down. But this is a control system for controlling speed. There's a predefined speed that makes it go up and a predefined speed that makes it go down. The thing that was missing from all the evidence was the speed factor. So we had evidence about the toys going up and down, and the court's absolutely correct. Our toys go up and down.
Where does the court make that finding?
The court makes that finding on page 45 of its order, which is appendix 67. Kind of in the middle of the page, it talks about Mr. Wong's testimony that they do not set predefined speeds based upon...
I'm on appendix page 45.
67. I'm sorry, it's page 45 for the order, Your Honor.
Appendix page 67. Okay. Now, what would you like me to see where this particular, that even with multiple speeds, this does not meet the control system limitation because it does not control speed? So where is that fact finding?
Sure. There's on page 45, which is appendix 67, it starts with Spin Master's engineer, T.W. Wong, testified that the accused products do not set predefined speeds based upon the receipt or non-receipt of signals. Rather, Mr. Wong testified that the receipt and non-receipt of numerous signals indicate particular altitudes and that speed is then set as a function of a given altitude.
Okay, so where's the fact finding? That's a discussion of testimony.
Right. I mean, those are they relied on.
It wouldn't be a fact finding, it's summary judgment.
Okay, well, where's the conclusion that there are no facts?
Sure. And I think if you continue on, his conclusion is, and it goes through and continues, and it says, these are the reasons, and it goes on to Dr. Spanko's testimony, because again, Dr. Spanko confirmed this. Dr. Spanko, when asked about these flow charts, and I said, Dr. Spanko, what speed, what signal would not receive in multiple signal theory?
I'm wondering where the district court held that summary judgment was warranted because of the speed issue, and I don't see it anywhere in this pages. So where is a statement by the district court that he is granting summary judgment in light of the infringing products not having the speed limitation of Claim 1?
I think, Your Honor, this is the best... place I have to put
But all to. This is him laying out, this is what this person testified to, this is what this person testified to, this is what this person testified to. There's absolutely not a single sentence here that begins with therefore, or I conclude, or summary judgment is appropriate because.
Or no reasonable jury could find under these circumstances.
Yes. He's,
in fact, some of the argument makes it sound like there is an issue of material fact in this regard.
Yeah, and I agree there's no sentence that says that in this order, but I disagree that the court hasn't done the analysis and he put all the theories together, because these were all argued together, and the whole basis for our summary judgment motion was, under the multiple signal theory, was this idea of a predefined speed. That was our argument. And that's what he is deciding here under the multiple signal. So the thing that's kind of also getting lost in this paragraph is Dr. Spanko testified based on these flow charts.
So what you concede is that your product goes up and down,
yes,
depending on signals, the receipt of or non-receipt of particular signals.
Based on non-receipt, yes. It goes.
Okay.
There's some pulse width modulations or power motor adjustments that are made to the motor, but these are like little tweaks throughout.
Okay, so what you're saying is that it's not based on predetermined speed.
Correct.
Okay.
It's a speed control system that's claimed, and ours are height. And Dr. Spanko admitted, with respect to these flow charts, that when the signals are not received, he could not point to a signal or multiple signals when not received that caused the vehicle to set a speed that caused the vehicle to go down.
Set of speed is the key part of that.
Right. He couldn't find it. And so what he said, he called my question a good one. He said, your question is a good one, but what I will tell you is I played with the toys. I played with the toys, and the toys go up, and the toys go down. When you rub their case away, that's the problem, because there's nothing about the predefined speed. Everything is about up and down. They point to documents in the record that say up and down. I agree we go up and down, but I disagree there's any evidence in the record.
You agree that it goes up and down based on
the
receipt
or
non-receipt of signals.
Yes, but not based on setting a predefined speed, which causes a vehicle to go up or causes a vehicle to go down. And I believe their expert agrees with Spin Master that those flow charts that they're pointing to you and they're complaining about don't actually show that. Those flow charts don't support their position. They come to you with up and down, and I believe the claim requires more than up and down here today. And moving to the breach of contract claim, I believe that this settlement agreement is very clear. So Havok-Hallie's...
Well, I don't want you to move to a breach of contract claim, because I don't see any fact-finding at all that supports you on the speed issue or conclusion by the district court that summary judgment's warranted in light of your arguments regarding speed. So why don't you address the one signal issue?
But the single signal issue, the claim is we believe to be a binary claim. So you either receive a signal or you don't receive a signal, for example. So if you receive...
Why? It says transmitting a signal, receiving... a signal or said signal, we have a general rule that when you say a signal, it means one or more signals. How has this specification made it clear that general rule is inapplicable in this case?
Sure. And I agree, that is a general rule. But here we see this, how does this claim function? And I believe this is some testimony from their own expert that the district court keyed off of. And their own expert said, you know, with respect to multiple signals, how would it work? He's like, I don't know how it would work. And he called my question confusing. And so then I asked him in the context of the infringement allegations. So with respect to SpinMaster's product, he agreed with me. Receipt or non-receipt, for example.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you admit that he called your question confusing. Don't you agree that Dr. Spenko's testimony was understood by the district court that the word confusing was understood differently and inaccurately by the district court, in his opinion?
I don't believe so. I think if you read Dr. Spenko's testimony overall, I think it was clear and the context was clear.
Wait, so, but you just said he called my question confusing. That's what I thought he was doing.
Counsel did. I apologize. Counsel just came up to you and talked to me. I apologize if that was unclear.
So you don't think that in that testimony that Dr. Spenko was calling your question confusing? You think he was saying it would be confusing to have two signals?
I do, and I think that if you read it throughout the whole
Show me where and why you think that, because I don't think that's even within the bounds of reasonable.
Okay.
Your question were that some vehicles can cause other vehicles to go up and down, and he says, I don't know, that's confusing.
No, I agree. I do agree that was a bad question.
So, but that's the only place where this expert said, that's confusing, correct? And that's the place that the district court cited, and he attributed the that's confusing language to be, it would be technically confusing to have two signals cause vehicles to go up and down. That's part of how the district court reached its conclusion that only one signal could possibly be warranted by this claim, because even their expert admitted with two signals it would be confusing as to how it works.
I believe the district court got that conclusion from all his testimony. I agree that that testimony was cited in the order. I think the Dr. Spenko's testimony overall, where he talks about he can't identify multiple signals, right? So he focuses on signal C, for example, or Vectron wave. And he agrees, Dr. Spenko agrees, C alone does not get you there. You have to know what all the other signals are to know if it's going to go up or down. And so that's where I think the district court picked that up.
Okay, can we move back to the contract claim because the clock is running?
Yes.
The opposing counsel says that even if you're right about the interpretation of the agreement and that the Havok-Healy is related to the audit, that still that there were many sales of the Havok-Healy after the audit period, and those claims can't be barred by the settlement agreement. Okay, so what's the answer to that?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I don't think there's any
Which
evidence.
Part of it?
I disagree that there were sales of the Havok-Healy after the release.
Does the record tell us what the answer to that is?
I believe it does, Your Honor.
Where?
I believe I don't have that citation as I'm sitting here today, but I believe when the parties went through the audit and the original draft of the audit, which is attached in the record, I believe that in there reflected the sales.
Well, it did reflect the sales, right, in the original draft of the audit, the sales of the Havok-Healy, but I'm not understanding that it said anything about sales stopping at a particular time.
I don't believe that was an issue before the district court. That's why I'm trying to think through the record of what was raised, and I don't believe that issue was raised.
Do you agree that if there were sales of the Havok-Healy after the audit report that wouldn't be barred by the settlement agreement?
I agree, yes. The settlement agreement was released to claims that arose, existed, or could have been asserted prior to the effective date of the agreement. So, yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what the release says. So, this settlement agreement release was a release of an audit. This is not a SKU settlement agreement. The parties got together. They said, we want to have a discussion about specifically RICO instigated, and said, we want to talk about these licenses and see if you have paid royalties for all the products under the licenses. That's what the audit is. And that's reflected in paragraph A of Appendix 1495, which is the settlement agreement and release. It says there that the RCO, that's the Royalty Compliance Organization, conducted an audit of Spin Master's royalty accounting records related to the licenses listed below as referenced by the product SKUs identified in RICO's January 2009 report. Right? It's not just talking about SKUs. It's talking about an audit of licenses. Those licenses are specifically listed and included in the scope of this agreement in Provision 1. And then turning to that release provision, we see that that is a release related to the audit and additional selling periods and any claims for royalties thereunder. You will also see another clause after thereunder, other than the Spin Master obligations under this agreement. Of course, those Spin Master obligations under the agreement was the payment of royalties. So this release has nothing to do with the payment of the royalties or the SKUs, as he's referencing. This has to do with any claims that could have been brought under that audit. And so for those reasons, we believe that the contract claim has no merit and the district court was right. And I don't think there's any disagreement on the facts. I think everyone agrees they knew about the Havoc-Helly. If they wanted to not have the Havoc-Helly subject to that release, they needed to insert that language. And they didn't do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, with respect to the predefined speed...
Your opposing counsel has agreed that the control system of the accused toy does cause the helicopter, whatever it is, to move up or down and to different altitudes. Okay, so they say the sole argument they're making against, assuming a multiple signal construction, the sole argument they're making against infringement rests on the speed limitation. Okay?
Yes.
So where is it that we find in the record evidence from you that the speed limitation is satisfied?
There are several places. Let me start with APPX2611. This is the hovering program flowchart.
Are you going to direct us to an appendix page?
I'm sorry, APPX2611.
2611.
And at the risk of getting a lot of paper involved, the claim language, I think a lot of this problem stems from not paying attention to
be clear, this document says highly confidential outside attorney's eyes only, so... it's your client, so you decide...
It's not my document, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's their document?
Yes.
So you need to be careful how you proceed with it. You know, I have to say, there's sort of a ridiculous amount of stuff marked confidential in this case and in this appendix, and...
I will not discuss the actual issues that I believe are confidential. I think I can answer the question raised by Judge Deck without doing so. The claim language talks about predefined speeds, and then it says what those are. It specifically defines the first speed and second speed as a speed that causes a vehicle to gain altitude and to lose altitude. Okay? This is not speed must be 100 miles an hour. This is a more generic where it's defined by the claim as to what we are talking about. Their own documentation being Spin Master specific, and they said it, you heard it in this courtroom today. If all signals are received, we will gain altitude. If no signals are received, we will lose altitude.
No signals are less than all signals.
Well, that's not, that's infringement.
So not no signals.
And so their own documents show it, and we all went through the district court's opinion, and I'm going to refer the court to page 45 of that. It's APPX 7. This was the portion of the opinion that Spin Master's counsel directed this court to on the speed limitation, Your Honor, as to why the district court made factual findings on this point. Notably, all that you heard was the first two sentences of this paragraph. If you go on, the district court, in its own opinion, agrees that their engineer, T.W. Wong, testified that what I just described, that based upon the receipt or non-receipt of signals, it will either gain altitude or lose altitude, but it's even better. He says it will do it based on predefined increments. These products are predefined.
Increments, but not speed. It sounds to me...
Those are speed, Your Honor.
Well, wait. But I think the point is here that the more you guys talk about it, the more it seems to me that there's a claim construction issue here as to what the claim means when it says sets a speed. In other words, you both seem to agree about how the accused toys operate, but you disagree about what the speed limitation is. I don't know what the answer to that is, but it does seem to me there's an unresolved claim issue.
And Your Honor, what I would just respectfully submit to the court is this. I think that there's an unresolved issue because no one seems to want to read the claim.
The claim expressly says at the end of Claim 1, the very last sentence or the last element of Claim 1 is the first speed being predefined as a speed that causes the vehicle to gain altitude. The second speed being predefined as a speed, that's the only place predefined even appears in this claim, is in the description of how the only thing you mean by that is causing it to go up and down, right? Am I missing something?
You are not, Aaron.
All right.
And just briefly, there was a point made on the contract issue as to whether or not it was raised at the district court about the temporal limitation I described. In the district court's opinion, and this is at page 27 of that, which is APPX 49, this is the district court's verbiage from the order. RACO argues the release would not apply to any sales of covered products that occurred
post... Where is that again?
I apologize.
Say it.
APPX 49, and it is the middle paragraph, last sentence. This is the district court acknowledging that we argued that the release would not apply to any sales of covered products that occurred post Q2 2010, i.e. after the additional selling period. We made the argument there. We made it in the brief.
So what does the district court say about it?
Nothing. That's the problem. Okay. Is that the district court just says, hey, this argument was made. Oh, we don't care, though. We're just going to pay attention.
I get it.
So unless there are further questions.
No, we've got to end this someday. Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted. Final case for